I feel like I'm far away.
Hebrews. We're in Hebrews chapter 6. And we are going to see if we can finish this chapter tonight. We were starting off in the first part of this chapter, just to recap a couple of the weeks. And of course, Aaron filled in last week, and I'll be here next Wednesday, but then he's going to teach the next Wednesday, and then I'll get a couple of classes, and then he'll teach the next Wednesday. So we're both kind of tag-teaming here for the book of Hebrews. In the sixth chapter, guys, remember we talked about, you know, let's move on, let's grow, let's leave the first principles. Let's mature. Talked about the dangers of falling away. We got into that aspect. The commending the brethren here, and I believe that Aaron may have touched on a little bit about that last week in that section. In verse 9, but beloved, we are confident of better things concerning you. Yes, the things that accompany salvation, though we speak in this manner, for God is not unjust to forget your words of labor and love which you have shown towards his name, and so on. So you guys were discussing that last week. Well, having said all of that, we needed to talk about that because we're going into this next section. Well, if we just started at verse 13, we'd wonder, well, what was he talking about? For when God made a promise, what brought that up? Well, we're going to be dealing with that because he just made mention of that in verse 12, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. So now he's going to talk about promises. He's going to talk about how God is true to his word, and we're going to talk about his promises to Abraham, and get your thinking caps on, because we're going to talk about what kind of promises he's given us. And just remember what you guys studied last week, okay? So, TJ, let's finish this chapter, and we're starting in verse 13. Take two apiece, jump back to Janet. Well, maybe it's just like 40, maybe.
For when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, Surely blessings I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply you.
And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men indeed swear by the greater, an oath for confirmation. Confirmation is for them an end of all dispute.
Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us.
This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil. For the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek.
All right, guys. One of the difficulties when we go verse by verse, chapter by chapter, and we keep breaking things up, we sometimes lose the continuity of the book. What is the Hebrew? Why did the Hebrew writer write this book? What was the problem? What does he want to do to help these brethren? What was their problem? They weren't growing. What else?
They were kind of falling back to the old ways of the Jewish, of the Old Testament.
That's right. They wanted to go back under the old law. And we need to keep that in mind because that helps us understand what he was talking about that you studied last week and what we're going to be studying this week. Because he wants these brethren to hold on to what they had, to mature, because obviously they forgot to move on. They were holding on to the first principles, or they needed to hear the first principles again, rather. Let's put it that way. Because you obviously forgot the first principles, because the first principles were about Jesus. And now they're wanting you to go back under the old law, and you're forgetting about him. And if you would have just been building on that faith in Christ, which he talks about leading up to this, and how he concluded this chapter. Did you notice how he concluded it, guys, in verse 19? This hope that we have is an anchor of the soul. We'll talk about this in a moment. both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. And so he's introducing Jesus there. And that was the point. You have forgotten about him, but there's where your confidence, there's where your faith is. That's going to anchor your soul. So we'll talk about that in a few moments. But I just wanted you to see the big picture here. Always keep in mind where these brethren are, where they have been tempted to go back. But yet, as you guys discussed last week, the Hebrew has some confidence in these brethren. You know, that they can stay strong. And he wants them to hold on to the faith that they have and the promises. Okay, so when we start verse 13, he's going to be emphasizing the promises that God made to Abraham to let the brethren know that God's going to be true to your promises. What promises? So guys, let's start there. You might refer to last week's class, but what promises do we have that are given to us by God? And if we question God, then those promises won't mean much to us. Nancy?
We're given the promise of salvation through Christ.
Okay.
Acceptance and repentance.
Okay. Anything else? Aaron?
Well, can't you go to the verses above? He's just. He's righteous. Created law.
Yeah. You know, and that helps us to understand who God is. Let's face it, guys. Have you ever not believed what somebody said and you said, well, consider the source? What do we mean by that? Yeah, they've already shown that they're not reliable. We need to consider the source here. That's what he's talking about. And since in verse 13 he says, well, now, for when God made a promise to Abraham, well, why are you bringing up Abraham and God's promises to him? Because I want you to understand, consider the source, the promises that you have, the hope that you have, the faith that you have, is because of what God has said. Now you hold on to that because what people have been doing is they've been trying to get you to turn your back on Jesus. But that's what's going to keep you strong, to keep your focus on him. So let's talk about what promises that God made to Abraham. What did he promise?
Your seed, all nations will be blessed.
Any more? Okay, yeah. They become a great nation, and that you would get that land. And in our reading here, notice what he said, that when he made that promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself. And of course, he mentions this later on in this chapter, how that men understand this. Look at verse 16. He says, for men indeed swear by the greater, and an oath of confirmation is for them an end of all disputes. What in the world is he talking about there, guys? He's just using something that they could identify with. And what was it? Swearing by God, but swearing by something greater. What did he mean by it ends all dispute?
There's no one greater.
No one greater.
And he swore by himself.
Think of our judicial system. When somebody says, whether he says, I swear to tell the truth, or he just says, I promise or I will tell the truth. I'm telling you that, okay? What does that do to the audience or to the jury? Exactly. It should, okay? Unless the prosecutor or the defense lawyer gets up and pokes holes in them, you know, that they've lied another time. But if they've been true to that, you know, it's like, well, we'll just take his word for it. That's what happens in our judicial system. If you are an eyewitness, you say that guy did it to that guy, take your word for it because you said this is it. So we understand it removes it, and that's what he's talking about here. God couldn't swear by anything greater than himself. There isn't any. That's what he wants them to understand. Trust in God, because it's God who has delivered this message to you for you to keep strong. Keep on the right road. All right, verse 14. Surely blessing, I will bless you, and multiply, I will multiply you. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. Who's the he? How did he obtain the promise? Did he actually witness all of them?
No.
Not at all. Did he witness any of them? Was he a part of any of them? I mean, was he there when they became a great nation? Was he there when they got the land promise? Was he there when Christ came? None of them. Well, then how do you explain what it says here that, well, he patiently endured, he obtained the promise?
Because it was fulfilled.
Okay, that's true, Mallory.
Because he didn't doubt and waver, the promise was able to be fulfilled because Abraham kept his part, so God kept his.
That's the key within all of this, and which they need to understand, Lori.
And he still exists.
Exactly.
And he knows that it came true.
Yeah.
Just because we can't see him doesn't mean he doesn't know it didn't come
true. Does anybody know? How do you know Abraham's still alive today?
Well, we have the story of Lazarus.
Thank you, Mark. What did it say?
Well,
he went into
Abraham's
bosom. Abraham's alive and what? What's that?
That's right. When death claims me, that's I'm hoping that's the next person I see.
Exactly. That's where I want to go in Abraham's book. Absolutely. And yeah, so it's so he obtained it is the point, but he endured. As Mallory and the others you were mentioning, why bring that up? Why bring that up? Keep the context in mind, Lauren.
The Jews hung everything on Abraham.
They did. And Mark?
At the Transfiguration, Moses, who else? Was it Abraham and Moses there?
It was Elijah. Now, within that, we're talking about... I love it when people jump in. Then my mind goes blank. Why did they need to hear about this, that Abraham endured patiently? Even though he didn't see it. Well, it's because these brethren endured. Endure, be faithful. I just can't get help but think about the New Testament Christians. I mean, they lived as if they thought the Lord was going to come back in their lifetime. I mean, they just lived, and with that confidence.
The period from Abraham to Jesus was what, about 2,000 years?
Well, I know from Abraham to the law was 430, and then you have.
I think it was about 2,000.
Yeah, they estimate.
So. The Jews have got this 2,000-year history of God keeping his word. How could they question?
That's the point they needed. I mean, if you're going to endure, you don't question God. You can see the wisdom of the Hebrew writer saying, right now, let's focus on God. Now, I've been talking about these Old Testament, what they represent. We're about to get into Melchizedek and the connection with Jesus within all of this. They really needed to understand that because... In the timeline, where does Melchizedek come in? In the timeline. For Abraham. Okay? Abraham appears to him, right? And pays tithes to him, which is something we're going to get into in the next chapter. Because he's basically going to tell them that even the Levites were paying tithes to Melchizedek. You know? Because even though they hadn't lived yet. And so it's talking about the lesser and the greater. That's what he wants these people to understand. Who is greater in all of this? Well, I can see the big picture here. It's funny. You take little pieces of the puzzle, but it's the same discussion that I believe Paul is using in Galatians 3. You know, you want them. You know, you talk so much about the law, but he introduces Abraham and said, you know what? That was a promise made 430 years before the law. Why do you put so much emphasis on the law? So here, he brings up Abraham again, and he's going to talk about Melchizedek again, prior to the law. You keep putting so much emphasis on the law, which they should just learn it was there for a reason. It was temporary. All right, let's move on. And guys, you got a thought, just jump in. You got to cut me off. Verse 16, men indeed swear by the greater. I read that a moment ago. The oath of confirmation is not disputed. Verse 17, thus God determined to show more abundantly to the heirs of the promise... The immutability. Immutability means what?
Unchangeable.
Unchangeable. Never changing. Cheated, huh?
My version doesn't say that big one word. It says unchangeable.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, so. So God determined to show more abundantly to the heirs of the promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath. And if you go over to Genesis chapter 2, that he had made that promise by himself. No one greater than him. That these promises would be for Abraham. And the two immutable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. What is that? Through? We have to bring in this hope that they have through Jesus. It's got to be there. That is the focal point of all this. Do you think these Jews had any problem with God? Did they have any problem with God per se?
No.
I mean, you play that card. He's doing that throughout this book. We're going to talk about the God of heaven, the God of Abraham. Oh yeah, we love the God of Abraham. Matter of fact, we love Abraham. Okay. Yeah, we're gonna use that on you, but you need to learn some things about him. This is the problem that we have today in the religious realm. People talk about Jesus. I could parallel what we're doing here, what he's doing with God the Father. We could do the same thing with Jesus. Because they like to talk about Jesus, but they fail to remember Matthew 28:18. Jesus has all the authority. He's the head of the church. He purchased it and everything else about it. They love to use the name, but you need to understand some things about him, what that meant. Just like with God the Father here. And knowing the role that Christ played within all of this. Okay? Mallory. Jumping girl.
Verse 18. What are the two things that make it possible for God to lie? The two unthinkable things that make it so that he can't fly. What are those two things?
The fact that he would promise and he gave the oath for it.
Okay.
Those are the two things he already brought up previously up to that.
Okay. I guess I'm trying to figure it out. But...
yeah. It wasn't that verse. It wasn't the verse that followed that.
Okay.
Right. And you got that. I'm glad you picked up on that, Mallory, because sometimes people miss that point. I'm commending you, girl. I'm building you up here. Come on. That's comfort. Okay. This hope, he tells the brethren, we have an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast. Reminds me of a song we sing. Can't place it, but I just know it. There's that phrase is found in one of our songs.
We have an anchor.
Good job. Talk about a senior moment. That was the worst.
Is this a good time to tell you that the songs are in alphabetical order in the songbook as well?
Okay.
All right.
So, an anchor of the soul. Guys, this is fundamental stuff. What does an anchor do?
Hold you in place.
Okay. See, these brethren, they weren't held in place, were they? Because we know they were going backwards. Because you know what? You needed the first principles again. That wasn't like, oh, we know the first principles, let's just build on them. No. You needed the first principles taught to you again. So you were actually going backwards. So this dispels this concept that you guys can hold our own. We just hold our own. I won't add to my faith. Well, if you don't add to your faith, you're going to go backwards. Therefore, he says it's this hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which enters the presence behind the veil. Why are you introducing the veil? Had he even mentioned the veil in this chapter? Up till now?
Because the significance of being able to go behind the veil was behind priests.
Now they knew his role, right? Did anybody get to go behind there?
No. Except for the
who?
The high priest
goes there. On behalf of who?
Everyone.
Himself and the people, right?
Right.
It's just like, man, I want to go into that. Well, what's being represented? What's behind the veil? Presence of God.
Yeah. Capital presence.
Yeah. Do you think that these people would love to have been behind that veil? Now, they knew they couldn't. But, I mean, like, wow, I'd love to go behind that veil. He mentions it here that we can, but somebody had to do it for us. And he mentions it right in the next verse. Where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become our high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. We already mentioned that he was brought up a chapter ago. And I said, well, hold off. We're going to get to him in chapter 7. And we're about to talk about Melchizedek. Introduces him at this point. Jesus is our high priest. Going to have a problem with that one, though, aren't they? Why are they going to have a problem with Jesus being high priest?
He's another tribe of Levi.
What is he?
The tribe of Judah.
Yeah, and he's actually going to bring it up in this chapter. And by the way, If I don't get there, we're getting there. We'll get there. But about halfway through this chapter, he's going to be talking about which Moses spoke nothing, which, by the way, folks, it's that great passage that will tell us that you can use the silence of the scripture. Because that's the point that he's going to make. Mark, you got a point.
Isn't that the whole point of saying that Jesus is after the order of Melchizedek? Because he is a higher order of the Levitical priesthood.
That's the point. But he has to prove that. Okay, let's understand that. It's one thing to introduce something in a court of law, and he presents it here like that. All these arguments are just building on each other. It's a very strong letter of trying to help them learn. It's not just to say, the Hebrew writer isn't just trying to say, I'm right and you're wrong. No, he's actually trying to help lead them. You see this? And because of that, this? And you see this? It just leads to a logical conclusion where they should go, yeah, okay, all right. That's where it should go. And you're right about that, Mark. And so here it is. Introducing Melchizedek was important for him because he just mentioned again Jesus is our high priest. They've got questions. They've got struggles with that. Now, you can understand their struggles. You guys just said it. He's not from the tribe of Levi. So before that door is shut, he says, but it's after the order of Melchizedek. Now, they would be familiar with him. They would be familiar with him. You guys know much about him? Yeah, we're about to read that, Keith. All we know is really what little we have here and what it makes reference to in the Old Testament. Okay. So we have to rely on this. And I think that a lot of people get bogged down in things by just saying, are you trying to tell me he never had parents? You're missing the point. Okay. Let's not lose sight of why the comparison. Why introduce him? Okay. Before we get into the seventh chapter, be asking yourself, why are we going to be talking about Melchizedek? There's the wisdom of God. Way back then. Think about this. Think about the providence of God. And Aaron will preach a lesson on that since he got it all last night about the providence of God. I missed it. Kenny Moore was preaching on it. But yeah, you think about that. And the wisdom of God, way back there, this little incident, we call it a little incident, Moses runs into him, pays tithes, recognizes him, and here God is going to use that very incident.
Abraham.
What did I say?
Moses.
Did anybody here not know what I meant? Debbie does that all the time. I know what you meant. She doesn't even correct me anymore. I just know you meant this. Okay. So Abraham, that little incident. And here we are, as Mark talked about, thousands of years later, uses that very thing, that incident, to help these brethren with their faith. Wow, what a coincidence. God knew what he was doing. And it was all part of it. God had this plan in mind before the foundation of the world. And Jesus was going to be our high priest. But you think that would be a problem for some people who had this Levitical priesthood for thousands of years? Yeah. I mean, and I think that helps us, guys, to kind of understand the struggle the early Christians faced. Because most of the New Testament is what? What does most of the New Testament mean?
Substantiate who Jesus is.
And the struggles with Judaism. The struggles. How many books? Go ahead, Mark.
Well, this is kind of a side note. I was looking in the commentary I have to the book of Hebrews.
Okay.
And they make the point that the writing is unknown and trying to estimate the time of the writing. And they estimate it between 64 and 68 AD. So these people were just a couple years away from Jerusalem being destroyed. And that whole Judaism being wiped. I mean, place of Judaism being totally destroyed.
Yeah, if this is before the destruction of Jerusalem, it would be harder for these guys, I think, because they still have the records. It was very important to them to know who you came from, which tribe you were a part of. You destroy that, it's like, oh, now what? It might be a little bit easier to tell them you don't need it. You know, it might be a little easier pill to swallow that, you know, really, that's no big deal. But when it's still in existence, that would be a real struggle. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, there's so many lessons there, Matt, because you just never know how much time you have. And these people, I don't know how many of them listened to Paul, the writer, and how many of them didn't.
Yeah.
You just can't know that.
That's true. Every time I finish the book, whenever we've studied this in the past, we go, ironclad arguments. Slam dunk. Jury goes, guilty, guilty. You know, in other words, they just know. And yet, there would be some who, you know, no, I'm going to hold on to it for whatever reason. And we know some of the reasons why, or excuses, but traditions can have a strong hold on them. And I think what this book does for me, guys, is to be a little sympathetic of dealing with even my denominational friends, you know, being a little patient with them. Because it's easy for me to say, you know, Calvinism is wrong. But man, if you've had that ingrained in you since you were a child, seriously, when you've had people tell you over and over and over again, works have nothing to do with salvation, you're born in sin. I mean, when you're convinced of that for 30 years, 40 years, and then you sit down and have a study with somebody, and you just tell them, no, that's wrong. Oh, okay. It's not that easy. And it was hard to pound that false doctrine out of me. But eventually it happened. But it doesn't happen to everybody. And a bunch of you here came out of that very stuff. All right, anything else in chapter 6, guys, did you want to bring up before we get into the next chapter? Because basically it has started because he has introduced Melchizedek. And that's where we're going to pick up in chapter 7. Floor is open. 3, 2, 1. Done. Okay, Trey. Let's cover the first 10 verses. I don't know if we'll get that far tonight, but you can have two, and we'll go over to EJ. If you're up for reading, EJ, you're going to read verses 3 and 4, and then we'll go back to Mark.
For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, a priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated king of righteousness, and then also King of Salem, meaning King of Peace. Without father, without mother, without any you have a mother at the beginning of things, being of life, or made like a son, remains a priest continually. Now consider how great this man was.
Patriarch.
And indeed, those who are the sons of Levi, who receive the priesthood, have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law, that is, from the brethren, though they have come from the loins of Abraham. But he whose genealogy is not derived from, and who received tithes from Abraham, and blessed him who had the promises.
And without doubt, the lesser is blessed by the greater. In one case, the tenth is collected by people who died, in the other case, by him who is declared to be living.
And so it speaks for Abraham, even Levi, who received tithes, paid tithes, for he was still in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him.
Okay, this passage is really stressing that lesser and the greater again, and of course being acquainted with Melchizedek and who he is. All right, as we get into this, he talks about, you know, basic fundamentals of who he is, the king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the king, slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all. All right, I'm going to stop right there and interject a little something, because it comes up a lot. When you study with people, and the concept of tithing comes up, we often tell people, no, tithing is not for today, because what? We usually say what?
It's under the old law.
Okay, we say it's under the old law. Is this the old law? Is this the old law? Old law hadn't even been given yet, right? That's not up for another 430 years.
Patriarch is the term.
Patriarch, under the patriarchal law, that they time period, they had tithing was done. And so their logic is, Courtney, they're saying, well, not only was it commanded under the old law, which it was, and you have Abraham doing it even before the old law, that's why we need to do it today. Whoa, pretty strong. Response? No.
I say, this is how it was with me. We're under a better law. We're under a more free law. So to represent
how grateful we are of that, then we need to show something that we know better than the
is the way that it was explained.
I like that. I don't think it'll convince them, of course, but I do like that. Keith?
Well, kind of what along with what she said, but if you apply the same logic, Abraham offered sacrifices. Under the old law, they also offered sacrifices. We don't offer sacrifices today because it's not required in the new law.
Well, they would say Jesus was a sacrifice. Sure.
If Christ was a fulfillment of the old law, wasn't he not also a fulfillment of the patriarchal time period too?
Well, yeah, those promises to Abraham were fulfilled over here. You're right. And a lot of the prophecies and everything, well, we even know that this was given to bring people to Christ. We know that as a schoolmaster. You're absolutely right. One of the things, guys, and all that you guys are talking about is fine, but one of the things that kind of helped me to understand this and helping people see, remember, we're talking about tithing here, okay, for a moment. Because Abraham did it, it was under the old law, and we're saying, well, today, we're under the new law, and we don't do that. Well, one of the great passages in all of this is Galatians chapter 5, 1 through 4. Does anybody remember offhand what Paul told them, that if you did this, Christ profits you nothing? Does anybody remember what it was?
Circumcision?
Thank you, Mark. If you're circumcised, Christ profits you nothing. Question, was circumcision under the old law?
Yes.
Yes.
Was circumcision under the patriarchal time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was. It was. They, Abraham was given that, and so if, for them to be consistent, we're saying, okay, if you're going to say because Abraham did it and the old law did it, we have to do it. Well, we're under a new law today, but even Galatians 5 says, if you practice circumcision, Christ profits you nothing. But wait a minute, they did it back here, they did it over here, and he says, it profits you nothing. So you let them know within that, guys, is that when Christ, he did away with all that. And I like what was mentioned a moment ago there. Forget who it was. But that it was fulfilled. In other words, Christ did away with everything. Hebrews 1 and 1 and 2, we did it, didn't we? God what? Spoke in times past, but to the fathers, the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son. Covers it all. The fulfillment of this, which is what we're dealing with, it's really not that much of a tangent we're going on here, guys, because people are still wanting to bring some of this stuff over into the new law. Still a struggle. And we need to kind of have an answer to try to help them see it, is my point. Not just to prove that they're wrong and that we're right, but help them to see it. Help them open up their eyes. Any other thoughts?
Symbolically, it's still all true that we are to be circumcised of the heart, and we are to give from the heart, and we are to be a living sacrifice for God. It's still all there.
All those things are this. Well, you know what a shadow is. But that's what it is. It, all those things were a shadow of the real thing which was to come. And he's about to do that, isn't he? We're going to get into that. What I might consider, it's all meat, but we're really going to get into the meat part 7, 8, and 9 in this chapter, or in this book, rather, of telling us of all the things they did back here. And it was types and shadows of things to come. And you guys needed to see this to prove this thing. Because he's not denying that they were there. The Hebrew writer's not going to deny these things. But they meant something, Mark.
It was kind of interesting when you think about it. You look back over those times, most the law of Moses was a very visual thing. You had the temple, it was tangible. You had a temple, you had all these things that that pertained to it. And now you come to Christ, and all those things now are going back toward the spiritual realm.
And by that is an interesting point, because when you think in terms of a shadow, you think of a shadow as something intangible. I'm the real thing. That's just I can't get a shadow. But you know, that's a shadow of my hand over there. This is the real thing. And the real thing with Jesus is spiritual, where this was all physical. The tangibles that were there. And that, again, I think is a big stumbling block for these brethren, because they wanted the tangibles. because the tangibles meant that, well, now I know I'm right. I'm actually going through the physical things. And we're saying, well, spiritually we know we're right because we walk by faith. We have that, well, what did we end the chapter with? Our faith, an anchor of the soul. Guys, you don't have faith, you don't have that. You don't have that anchor. I tell you, if you're not walking by faith, you don't have an anchor, because I'll tell you what will happen. The first wind that comes up, trial, hardship, you're off course. Well, where's that anchor? Where's that anchor? Well, it's not there. And you say, I don't know, Chuck. I'm just not as strong like I used to be. Your anchor isn't there because you don't have the faith. You need to build up your faith. James.
There's a lot of people that want something they can see too, but there's many examples in the Old Testament where they saw God do something for them and then they turned their back on
him. It's true. You know, when people say to me, you know, if I could just see it, I would do it. What? No, not at all. Just like the rich man was told. You brought the story up, Mark. The rich man was told what? Why aren't you going to send Lazarus back? He was told, even if someone goes back from the dead, they won't listen. How do we know that's true? Jesus Christ himself came back from the dead. People didn't listen. I mean, the evidence is there. They have Moses and the prophets. If you want to walk by faith, there's enough evidence there. And that's what I love about this book, is because there is overwhelming evidence. If you just take it, you want to hold this old law, and you want to hold Abraham up, fine, let's do it. Let's get in here. Let's look and see. And you'll see clearly, it's all about Jesus.
I was going to add, you think about it, when Jesus was, what were the Pharisees always trying to get out of Jesus? They try to turn him into like a sideshow. Show us a miracle, entertain us. That was not what that was about.
I've said this a million times, exaggerated a little bit, but if TJ could perform a miracle and we bring CNN in here, what are they going to say?
No.
Then what? No. Just keep it up. They're not going to listen to what he has to say. They just want to see it. And that's what the Pharisees do. Do it again. But they didn't want to listen. And Jesus didn't want to do it. Forget it. I'm not going to do this as a sideshow like you're talking about, Mark. Trying to get people to learn, which he told the feeding of the 5,000. You seek me not because of the miracle, but because you want your belly stuff. All the wrong reasons. Nancy?
But the Pharisees, they were just jealous anyway, because they wanted to be able to do that. They knew in their hearts who he was. But because they couldn't do what Jesus did, and they didn't have the power that he had, you know, they were jealous of that.
That was the word. I was just going to say that word, and you got it. They were jealous of him. He took the crowds away from him. Jesus shows up. People listen to him. They just wanted their crowds back. And they figured the only way to get their crowds back is kill him. You know, you destroy that, they're going to go away. Well, they destroyed him, and they're still followers today. Didn't they? Now, what about this idea, guys, without father and without mother, without genealogy? No record of it. So, do we sit here and talk about, wow, God created this person, just like he created Adam and Eve. Did he? Yeah. No record of it. That's all it was. That's the analogy he wants to use. I need to use somebody, you know, in the Hebrew writers, if we're going to use somebody that compares to Jesus. And so we've got this high priest. You guys believe he was a high priest? No, we don't believe he's a high priest. Oh, so you think Abraham did something wrong? Well, we're not going to say that. You see the value of bringing Abraham into this? Abraham paid tithes to him. He recognized him as a high priest. Was he a high priest? Yes, he was. Okay, we have to confess that. He was a high priest. Oh, did he come from the Levitical family? No, that didn't happen. From Aaron? No, didn't. Okay, so hold that thought is his point. Lord.
The beauty of Melchizedek is he was a priest and a king, and that's exactly what he was.
Exactly. It's perfect. I don't think, again, it's not coincidence, you know, that we have this analogy that is there that was going to be useful for these brethren.
Remember the conversation we had a couple weeks back when I told you what I've read, who they said they called.
Oh, yeah, right.
Seth?
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd forgotten you mentioned
Yeah.
That. completely was gone. That was like way out in left field. Never heard that before, ever.
Yeah.
They never hear it again. So yeah, so we have that, no record of it, but king, high priest, and for these Jewish Christians who are being tempted to, no, don't follow Jesus, it's not the way, don't listen to them, because if you listen to Abraham, if you follow him, he'll get you where you need to go. I love this. Yeah, we're going to talk about Abraham. Follow him. What do you mean? Well, he paid tithes to this Melchizedek, and Jesus Christ is a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. Now, forever. Where does that come in the comparison with Melchizedek that we just read? Where does the forever come in? In the description of him, of Melchizedek. No record of him dying either. Oh, so I guess he's still alive. Is he still alive?
Somewhere.
Okay. All right, you got me again. Okay, I walked into that one. Somewhere. Okay. But the whole idea is there's no record of him ever perishing. Okay? And so the idea of him being a high priest, Jesus, after the order of Melchizedek, fits. It fits is the point. No record, no father or mother, as he mentions here. But made like the Son of God and remains a priest continually. Under the, they knew these priests, right? What happened to these priests?
Died.
Yeah, they all died. They knew that. They eventually died. Now Melchizedek, no record of it. They had the records of the others. Now consider how great this man was. Who's this man? All right, that's important. The whole message here, this is why when we talk with people, we say, now get this, or pay attention, and get this point. That's what he's doing. I can see the Hebrew writers. Now pay attention. Consider how great this man is. If you're not going to consider how great this man is, my point will not be seen. It's a waste of time. You have to follow through. That's what we do with our sermons, right? We got point, point, point. We're leading to a climax. We say, hey, hang on, you know, stay with me. Stay with me. Because if you don't, you're going to miss it. And that's what he's doing here, guys. Learning how to teach, follow this guy. It's like learning to become a great lawyer. You know, learn from the best. Learn. The way he approaches it, because you have to understand, why are they like this? Why is he bringing up this discussion? When you know why people believe what they believe, you can help them better.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know what happened the last 5 minutes, but I said this before, I think, when we started this. You have to know your audience. You know, I mean, we need to make sure that we do our studying, you know, and know what others believe and where they're coming from, because like you said, if you just say, oh, well, it says this and this is right, you're wrong, you're not going to get anywhere. He knew his audience, he knew what to use, you know, not against them, but so they would understand better. And, you know, just like some of the other letters, the authors will use light and dark a lot, you know, good and evil. I mean, just knowing your audience is the best way to get through to them.
And how are you going to know? How will you know where your friend is? You've got to talk. You have to listen. If you put words in their mouth, I mean, I learned early on, young preacher, man, going into a Bible class and giving this Baptist whip for, only to hear him say, I don't believe that. Don't categorize people. Don't categorize. Because let's face it, there are people that go to certain religious groups and they don't believe what they teach in certain areas, so we just have to be careful. Mark, you had your hand.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The writer did a fantastic job of subordinating Judaism to Melchizedek. By doing so, when you make the link between Melchizedek and Jesus, it's case closed, because there's no disputing who is the greater.
Exactly, exactly. And that is the key within all of this. It's like not leaving anything untouched. Key.
So I may have missed this conversation earlier without teaching, but so. You can only take what the Bible says here about Melchizedek.
Yeah.
So are you implying that he was just... See, I've always taken this as, we don't know a lot about him, but we know he was special. And we know that there were instances like Enoch where he was taken up. We don't have any record of this happening with him, but it does say he had no beginning and no end.
Right.
So are you saying that's not literal there?
No, I'm just saying we just take it as... You know, we could debate that all night. I'm just saying.
Right. Okay.
That he only introduces him because.
But we know he was some special. He was,
yes. Okay. And there's no record.
Okay.
That's it. We just say there's no record. Here's it. Are you? What about? I don't know.
Right.
You know, but I do. We what's very important in any of these classes is we establish what we do know.
Okay.
He was a high priest. He was a king. Abraham paid tithes to him, and so did Levi through him and through Abraham's loin. Who's the greater? Melchizedek. Greater than the Levitical priesthood. That's very important for him to establish. And I'm glad he clarified that. Make sure, because especially when you have visitors, we don't tonight, but I mean when you have people coming in, you want them to understand that you don't want to leave with more questions than answers. The questions that you might leave with, you want to know there are no answers. Okay? You can have questions, and questions deserve answers. And so we want to deal with the things that we do know and not spend a lot of time talking about the things we don't know. Our time is gone. And so we're going to pick up right there in verse 4, Lord willing, next week, and go from there. Thank you guys for your participation.